And but it doesn't take too much convincing. You know, people want to come to Taiwan, so that's nice.
How to make them stay here?
Yeah, that's a little, that's a little bit of, oh gosh, okay. There's a lot.
Need to talk 1 hour?
I mean, it is, it, yeah, that's a lot. I mean, in a nutshell, Singapore does this really well. You get there, you meet with the EDB, and they help walk you through everything. Finding an apartment, not getting ripped off finding an apartment, opening a bank account, finding school for your kids, like all that stuff they really, really do a good job helping with. A lot of people would have stayed here. Amazing, like super duper successful, you know, venture capitalist founders would have stayed here, for instance, if they could find a good school for their kids. And so that is unfortunate. And it's a hard problem, right? How do you really preference, you know, locals versus immigrants? It's a really tough problem to solve. I'm not oversimplifying it. But there are things like that that do prevent people from sticking.
This is Startup Island Taiwan. Everything about Taiwan and cutting-edge technology, startup unicorns, and connections to the world.
Welcome to Startup Island Taiwan and co-host Chu Ko.
I'm Wendy, co-host for today.
Today we are so glad to finally invite Twitch co-founder Kevin Lin to come to our office to chat about the project he's working on in Taiwan and also why he stayed at Taiwan for these years.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Really excited to be here.
So I think first, why do you come to Taiwan and why do you decide to stay here?
I came here a little over 3 years ago because of COVID. I was with my parents living in San Francisco, and we were sort of stuck in our homes for 8 months. And one of the major impetuses was to get my parents out of, you know, a COVID place. And Taiwan was open. There was no COVID. All my friends were here saying, hey, it's great. You should bring your parents. And so I finally convinced them. It took a long time, but finally convinced them to come. We left at the end of November, and we're only going to be here for a couple of months and go back. And everything here was great, you know, and decided to stick around. My mom had to go back into physical therapy, so she got back into physical therapy here. It was really quality therapy and significantly cheaper than the Bay Area. So everything just kind of started to point, you know, I guess my parents' brains towards actually maybe being back in their, you know, motherland is a good idea. And I had a great time. I miss my friends back in America, but Taiwan was really cool. I had been coming here a lot since I was a kid. But I came here a lot for work since 2010 because Taiwan was one of our top countries
for Twitch. Yeah.
And Taipei was our number one city by minutes watched per day. And so I was always really curious, like, what are people doing here and why are they on our platform so much? But yeah, so many reasons to come. But at the time, it was more COVID as the primary push.
But things is already after COVID. And what's the key factors that make you stay?
I mean, I enjoyed it out here. I really love being in Taipei, in Taiwan. So partially my parents were like, hey, I think it's good here. Healthcare is really good. And they weren't doing a whole lot in San Francisco anyway. You know, they had just moved there about a year and a half before from New Orleans, which is where I grew up, and didn't have a lot of friends there. I don't think they really, you know, felt much attachment to the place aside from me being there. And here is just a little bit more comfortable. And then beyond that, yeah, I don't know. I like it. I like it here. I think it feels good. It's like a low baseline of expectations having left San Francisco where it started to become very not safe. And like my house got broken into at the start of COVID. I just, you know, had these random encounters on the streets that were just not very comfortable. And so being here was good. A lot of friends came out here during COVID, of course. Unfortunately, a lot of them left in May when the lockdown hit here, although it only lasted a couple months. And yeah, just made a lot of friends out here. Feel like it's just a better, for me, it's a better life. I'm walking more, a little bit healthier, although I was eating a lot of junk food.
Including boba tea?
Yeah, I probably overdid it. And so now I have to like stay away from it all. I just really like it. I feel this draw to Taiwan. I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's genetic. I have no idea, but it feels good being here. And since then, you know, made a lot of friends, built a lot of good community out here, both in just everyday life, random things, and, you know, met a lot of startup people out here, which is something I love. I love working on. So that's been really fun and lots of just interesting things to do.
But you are Kevin Lin, so you can basically live anywhere, like different states in the US or different countries like Singapore. Or why do you choose Taiwan, or do you ever think of maybe other cities?
I thought about this. I've lived in a lot of different places. Well, I'm Taiwanese. I like being able to use my Taiwanese, which is not very good, but I can get by. I can understand a decent amount, but speaking is a little slower. But the people here are just really awesome. I can't quite put a pin in it. And all my friends that come here say the same thing. Like, why is everyone here so nice and friendly? And I don't really know why, but they are. And there's this like sense of just general decency and like respect for others that I feel here versus other places I've been. And I think people here are also very present day to day. It's easy to hang out. People just kind of hang out randomly. There's always something to do. I think there's good work-life balance, so to speak, here. Although I don't even know if people think about it that way.
Yeah, but maybe not for Taiwanese who are working here.
Right. Maybe not. Yeah, that's also true, right? Like I experience like a very different microcosm, right? Everywhere I go, that's actually probably true these days, unfortunately. I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know if it's good or bad. But it is a great place. I feel comfortable. I feel there's lots of things to do. The city's great. Getting out of the city's awesome. Lots of great hikes, like natural hot springs and waterfalls you can go to. But mostly it's the people. I got to say, it's nice that there's almost no crime. It's nice that, you know, I left my phone in an Uber the other day and got it back. My dad's left his wallet in taxis like four times. And every time he gets it back with all the money in it, you know, every credit card, everything is all still intact.
You can also leave your laptop in a coffee house.
You can save your seat at a cafe with a laptop, which is impossible in America. And so there's just, I don't know what, I'm curious to get y'all's thoughts on, like, how did Taiwan become this way? I continually try to figure this out.
Yeah, we don't know too. But I mean, in other way, we also curious how did San Francisco become this way?
Oh gosh, many things. I mean, you know, a big part of it, and you see this in a lot of places, is gentrification. San Francisco driven largely by finance and the startup scene, where suddenly all this wealth, all this money came in and, you know, people get displaced. They don't want to be displaced. It's a hard thing. You know, it's something that Taiwan has to really think about too. Taiwan rents in Taipei are crazy now. And what can you do about that? How do you learn from what other people have done in the past? Singapore obviously has solved it largely through public housing. Other places have done a decent job of it, but it's hard. And so part of it all really kicked off with that gentrification and just this lack, you know, frankly, lack of care from the government for those who are displaced and solutions for them if they don't want to leave their homes or at least their home neighborhood. And then beyond that, lots of poor decision making around things like what constitutes crime. So, you know, you can rob a store for less than $960 and you won't risk going to jail. And so that just causes a lot of people to be very bold and brazen about what they do. And, you know, when you have a city with such a wide dichotomy of wealth, you're going to see this, unfortunately. I grew up in New Orleans where crime was always bad. You know, it's one of the highest homicide rates in America and crime is, you know, unfortunately ever present. But San Francisco, you don't expect that, you know, such a intelligent, smart, rich place. And yet it's just out of control. It's getting better. Lots of good people there are trying to make it better. And I think it will improve, but it's weird to see it. It's weird to experience it. You know, I was there 2006 till 2020 and saw that, you know, decline. It was always a little gritty, you know, and that's just everywhere that has, you know, progress, I think, and in that way. And I'm obviously oversimplifying it, but I think a lot of it was just, you know, governance and this sense of, you know, great wealth and displacement and this growing dichotomy of the people there. And it's also very transient. You know, a lot of people go there for a few years and leave. And so it's, you know, that broader sense of community is also easily disrupted.
So you spend most of your time in Taiwan now?
Yeah, mostly here. I'm trying to stay put more. I was going back and forth to America a lot, but now I'll be here mostly.
Do you meet the California's like nature or the people? Because sometimes the most talented people you just can only meet at the Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I miss my friends. You know, I do. I miss my friends. I miss the conversations. I miss, you know, thinking about weird things. You know, I feel like when I go back, I learn a lot about, like right now, AI. Everyone's talking about AI and most of my smartest friends are out there, you know, in that thinking space. So I miss them. Do I miss the place? In a way, you know, I miss some of my favorite food. I miss some of my favorite places to go. The reality is my life, you know, I didn't get to appreciate San Francisco area that much because I was traveling almost all the time for work. I was traveling easily 60, 70% of the year. And so when I was home, I was just home. I just wanted to like sit on my couch and watch YouTube. That's what my dream day is. And I didn't get to explore too much. You know, I did in the beginning. I was road biking. I was doing triathlon. I was very active when I first moved to San Francisco, and then things got busy. So I didn't even get to really appreciate it, honestly. And for me, it's like, you know, I don't really care where I am. It's really the people you hang out with. That's what my life experience has taught me that. So as long as I can have some friends, you know, nearby and my family's nearby and I'm good. Yeah. I don't really need the place, but I miss my friends there.
Yeah, after weighing the pros and cons, you decided to stay in Taiwan. What have you been up to recently?
So first 6 months I got to Taiwan, I really did nothing. I had quit my job. I had nothing. I was like still talking to like some of my portfolio companies I invested in and keeping in touch with some friends from all over the place. But I didn't really have a job. I didn't have a team to manage. I didn't really have anything to do. And so I was just out doing nothing. I was like kind of just hanging out. And then lockdown hit May 2021, and I had been talking to a couple friends who eventually became my co-founders for a new company called MetaTheory. We build games and interactive experiences. We launched our first project actually December 2021 called Duskbreakers, which was an NFT project that was meant to be a video game. And we actually launched with a video game. We built that game in just a couple of weeks with a small team, and then raised money from Andreessen and Pantera and a few other funds and lots of friends and family and angels to start a larger, you know, interactive media company, basically. And so right now we have this Web3 game called Duskbreakers. The IP is called Duskbreakers. That's actually, the game itself is actually being built here in Taiwan, in Taipei, with a Taiwanese team. And we're also building a second game that is more of a mobile app, more of a mobile social app with games as like a sort of connective tissue. So that's been fun. We have 19 people here in Taipei, 56 people around the world. And it's actually taught me a lot. It's just, I've never made games before. You know, I was in the games industry, so to speak, but like I had never made games before. So that's been an interesting learning process, understanding art and story and tech, and especially these days, AI, that we're trying to all, you know, intermeld into something that is usable and fun. Yeah, so that's one thing. The other thing is, been working on a fund. I've done a lot of angel investing myself. And now last year decided to start a fund with a couple friends from, you know, games and venture capital space. And part of that is going to be to invest here in Taiwan. And we're going to start with, you know, first check in, you know, brand new startups, young founders that just want to do something, have a great idea and just need some help, need some funding, need some mentorship, need some access, you know, some network, and start doing that. My friends and I sort of did a bunch of like random one-off investing here and there in Taiwan companies just to help support, but it wasn't organized and there wasn't like a thesis around it. And so we're trying to get that more organized and structured and, you know, sort of activate the network that we have around the world to help. And then what else have I been doing? I've been finding like random free outdoor hot springs. That's been nice. That's really fun.
What's it like for your daily activities? What's Kevin's daily like?
I wake up typically somewhere between like 6 and 7. So I do my first phone calls. So I'll get up, go immediately into the internet, into Google Meet or Zoom, do calls with my team, catch up with some people. Then some afternoons I'll go to the office where the team's working, especially if there's like a play test to do, and just brainstorm on, you know, game
office,
thoughts.
You mean MetaTheory's office?
Yes, our office here. And then do some calls for the fund. And then afternoon, yeah, hang out in the office or do some meetings, catch up with some people. And then nights could be anything. You know, lots of people come to town these days. And you know, one of our goals is to get more people to move here. So we want to make sure we can host people and make sure they meet people and make some friends out here and see some cool things and slowly, you know, build the gravity for moving people here to Taiwan. A lot of convincing of people to hire people here as well. That's been going decently well. And then, yeah, I don't know. These days I'm trying to exercise, trying to go for walks, things like that. Hang out with my parents, hang out with my wife. Little things here and there. Trying to find hobbies. I need to learn Mandarin.
But how's your strategy?
I have no idea. My friend found a tutor that was pretty good. So I have to go do that.
Yeah, maybe you can build an app to learn.
I know. There actually is a company here that's built an app. I forget the name of it. But it was pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty decent. I should find the name and tell you. But no, I think I just need to find a tutor. I just need to commit. Yeah.
But we all know that the life here is safe and maybe easy. But for the business-wise, Taiwan cannot compare with the US or other, maybe like Singapore. How do you attract your friends to come to Taiwan?
I mean, a lot of people like it. Like, a lot of people have been here before at some point, and they like it here. And so I just bug them. I just bug people to come visit. You know, I think we need to put some structure in. Another project we worked on last year was Sundance Asia. And so that brought a lot of cool people here. And we'll do that at least, for the next couple of years. It's working. I mean, it worked. It did the thing we hoped it would, which is the guy who won, the film who won the Stag, the shorts competition here, got the jury prize at Sundance in Park City this year. So that was awesome. And so we hope that, it's just one another piece that helps, the film industry here. So it's kind of, trying to find, we have a lot of cool friends that are amazingly successful and, experts in their fields that we'd love to just bring out here and see if they can, one connection is good enough, right? If you help one person here, that helps a lot. There's a huge, build up exponential effect when things like that happen. But it doesn't take too much convincing. People want to come to Taiwan, so that's nice.
How to make them stay here?
Yeah, that's a little. That's a little bit of. Oh gosh, okay. There's
you
a
need
lot.
To talk 1 hour.
I mean, it is. It, yeah, that's a lot. I mean, in a nutshell, Singapore does this really well. You get there, you meet with the EDB, and they help walk you through everything: finding an apartment, not getting ripped off, finding an apartment, opening a bank account, finding school for your kids, like all that stuff. They really, really do a good job helping with. A lot of people would have stayed here. Amazing, like. Super duper successful, venture capitalists, founders would have stayed here, for instance, if they could find a good school for their kids. And so that is unfortunate. And it's a hard problem, right? How do you really preference, locals versus immigrants? It's a really tough problem to solve. I'm not oversimplifying it, but there are things like that that do prevent people from sticking. There's a lot of little things. I think the bank thing is probably the thing that comes up.
Everybody just talks about that.
Getting money in here is just hard. Like I understand why, I think, but you got to somehow make that a little bit easier when it's so tedious and everything is paperwork, right? Nothing is digital. I think that's getting better, actually. It seems like there's more digital adoption for contracts and things, but it's still like very paperwork heavy. It's very time intensive. A lot of people don't speak the language. And so giving them help on language translation stuff would be helpful. Even having someone that can just recommend restaurants for you and help you book and order. Like they seem like such small things, but they really are day-to-day impactful to people, right? People, we talk to people all the time. It's these minor stresses that are just like, oh, I miss the ease of being in San Francisco or LA and everyone speaks English and I can just order things without having to use Google Translate or ask somebody for help. It's all these minor things that do stack up. But I think, most people like it. They feel comfortable here. They feel safe. They can build community pretty fast.
Why are you so passionate about building a community here?
I think I just tend to do that wherever I go. I just like hanging out with people, meeting new people, I like, I don't know. It's a good question. Why do I do this?
Entrepreneurial spirit.
It's this feeling of like I'm here. I might as well do something. And it does feel like, Taiwan really gave us a lot coming here out of San Francisco. I was lucky to be able to come with my parents. Not every place would have allowed that. And it was really a very warm embrace. People were super friendly, helpful, like very thoughtful. I think Taiwanese really follow up too. In America, you'll meet people random places and like, oh yeah, totally. Like, yeah, let's go to the gym sometime. Let's go do something sometime. And you just don't really hear back from them. Here, it's almost like they chase you. They want to make sure you get the thing that you are talking about. And they remember things, which is really, really cool. And I think, because of that, I felt really welcome. I felt really almost instantly at home. And so, just feel like giving back, feel like doing something, rather just do something. And I don't know, try to help in whatever communities I think I can help in. As a result of being here, just being in a place and making friends and having something to offer, whatever that may be.
And things you are starting to get involved with Taiwanese startup ecosystem. What do you think of it? What's your first impression?
My first impression is it's awesome because it seems like everyone's excited about it. The government's, from the government on down, there's all these programs and sort of a lot of marketing and PR about startups here. A lot of organizations like Startup Island, like TTA, like so many accelerators and funds are here. And then a lot of really excited founders. Like I just, every community event I go to, regardless of who organizes it, it's like really inspiring. So I think the energy is there and the desire is there. I think the talent is 100% there. I think Taiwanese are super capable, more capable than most places, capable as all places to build startups. I think my read on it, my understanding, and again, I've only been here 3 years, is one, there's not enough early stage funding. That seems to be a problem. And so a lot of people can't quit their jobs. So how does, why does San Francisco work so well? There's a lot of funding there. And so if you're a college kid, you don't even have to graduate. People will give you, if you're smart, you got a good idea and you can, sell yourself and network yourself, you can raise money. And accelerators like Y Combinator are there to, make sure you can do this full time. I think that's the key, is can you focus on a startup full time rather than doing it on the side as a side hustle? And I find a lot of founders here have to do that because they can't raise the money. If they can raise the money, they're giving away 30 to 50% of their startup almost immediately, which means by the next time they raise, if they're successful, they're almost, almost always going to be less than 50% share. And so you start to lose motivation at that point, especially if you need to raise another round. So that is, I'm not saying that's necessarily bad for the state of the ecosystem here, but that's certainly going to need to change if it wants to really grow. That's one part. The other part, I think, is fear of failure. You just have to know you're going to fail. 99% of startups fail pretty fast, and then the rest really struggle. A lot of people struggle for years and still can't find their way. And then there's always macro market cycles where funding is hard or users are shifting to a different behavior and you didn't predict that. So there's a lot to deal with, and you have to know that it's okay to fail. You have to be willing to ask for help and advice. A lot of people are afraid to do that. That's pretty general, but I find Taiwanese to be especially afraid to do that, to be bothersome to somebody else, when that's what startups really are all about, right? Investors, advisors, mentors, they're there for you to bother them. And you have to feel comfortable doing that. You have to use the time wisely, of course, but you have to actually do it. And then I think it's, everyone says this, I think it's this sort of, seeking the global audience. I think historically, it feels like there was a push towards developing stuff for the Chinese audience, particularly China. It makes sense. However, it's tough to compete, right? Chances are they'll out-resource you, or if you're successful, you might get regulated out. You just don't know. And so is it right to go to the West, English-speaking audience? Is it right to target East Asia or Southeast Asia? It's sort of anybody's guess. You just have to be smart about what sector you're in and what audiences can scale and has, sufficient revenue potential for you. So it's just about being smart about go-to-market strategy, but thinking, really big, thinking global, thinking, really targeting a specific audience that, can really drive meaningful revenue. Meaningful revenue being, can you get to $100 million in revenue in a year at some point in the future? I find a lot of the ideas that we've seen in the last few years are, they're interesting, ambitious ideas, but they are smaller audiences, right? Smaller potential. So that's harder to get a venture ecosystem excited when you don't really see these bigger ideas. And the last thing I think is just, you need a target, you need this aspirational ladder. And there haven't been that many examples here. In San Francisco, you see examples all the time of these young kids that have, reached unicorn status at the age of 26, 25, even younger. There's this feeling of oh, I could do that. I could do that. They're smart, but I could do that. You need that, right? You need those people you can point to that are also part of the community to say, hey, here's how we did it. Here's where we screwed up. Here's where we felt all this anxiety. Here's where we thought we were going to fail. Here's where we almost failed. And give people that, not only the story to feel good about their own potential, but also the operational experience to say, here's how we got through it, right? It's one example. You need multiple examples of that. So that's, I think a lot of the stuff there, but I think the talent's there, the desire's there. Generally, the structure's there, right? Every piece of the ecosystem is there and excited, but it just needs a little bit more oomph, I think, at the very starter point, right? It's a volume game, after all. This is really a volume game. And you look at Y Combinator, they have 250 companies per batch. It peaked at 340. Two or three of those companies become successful very quickly, and then dozens more become successful over the course of 5 to 7 years. And so that's what you need. You need volume. you know, in a game like this.
I heard lots of people talk about maybe Taiwanese or Asians is fear to fail, but compared to maybe people in San Francisco, they know you can fail, but the expense in San Francisco now is so high. Why people still can afford the failing? Because in Taiwan, your spend is quite low, so you are more, in practical, you are more okay to fail.
So it's complicated. In San Francisco, up until recently, there's been a lot of layoffs, unfortunately, in the Bay Area. And so the sort of overzealousness is starting to temper. But you could fail in San Francisco and join a company relatively easily. You know, people really respect the startup grind. So if you gave it a shot and you failed, there's a high probability you'll get hired by Facebook or Google or Apple or somebody like that, right? There's a good support network of people who said, hey, good job. You gave it your best. Like, don't worry that you failed. We're going to give you a job. So you feel secure in that way. Most founders can find a job either at a big tech company or at another startup, right? The beauty of a lot of these big startup communities is like they will hire founders because they know that they're risk takers. They're willing to think outside the box. They're willing to grind. They're willing to work really quickly. I think here, you know, it's probably partially that there's not necessarily like this huge support structure where if you go and start your own thing straight out of college, not everyone's going to necessarily look like positively on that, right? They might say, oh, you just goofed off for a couple of years. What did you really do, right? Especially when you can't raise money. You can't point and say, Andreessen believed in me. Sequoia believed in me, right? There's all these other sort of merit systems that are not traditional, so to speak. So I think that's a big part of it. But there's, you know, culturally too, you know, I don't know, it might be, you know, but all the immigrant story in America is very real. Everyone gets pushed to go do something very safe. Go be a doctor, go be a lawyer, right? Go do one of those two jobs, or go be a banker. And it's a very secure, safe job. So I think that is, you know, probably the same here. I don't really know. It's sort of, it is.
Push you to TSMC.
Or go to TSMC, right? You could go there. You're going to be good for life, right? You're going to be good for your whole life. And that's great. So there's global companies that have come here who will catch, I think, you know, entrepreneurs who don't make it in their startup. But even then, I think it's just this general sense of like, is this real, right? Is startup real? Again, to the earlier point on the belief system, are there people you can point to where you're like, okay, this was my friend's friend, right? Or this is my friend that did something really cool and interesting and got big. There's not that many examples. So it's not as easy to go to mom and dad and be like, I'm going to be like this person, right? You know, it's interesting, TSMC, like amazing story, obviously, and the shining star of Taiwan. But, you know, Morris Chang started in the 60s, got government money. Like, how many people could do that, right? You need those examples of young kids who, you know, fresh faced out of college, or maybe a couple of years after college, just were like, got bold enough to do it.
So we don't have that many early stage investments. So how can we solve these problems?
I think, you know, it's also complicated because like, you know, you can try to get outside money to come in. But then, it's hard to do that. All right. It's actually pretty hard to invest in Taiwan entities. So that's a, you know, I don't know how you solve that really, but I think it's worth thinking through, for the government. Then it just, you just got to have people willing to take risks, funds or individuals that are willing to take that early stage risk here. And that's hard. You know, when we were raising our fund, we talked to a ton of people like, would you be interested in a Taiwan only fund? And 90% of the feedback was, we're really interested in Taiwan companies, in various sectors, because there's various sectors are, you know, supported by Taiwanese outsourcing, OEM, ODM work. So there's a belief in the quality and there's a lot of trust in Taiwan. But there's no proof that it'll work, right? So if you got $1 million and you're going to invest in a fund and you can get access to any fund, chances are you're going to invest in a Bay Area fund, right? The returns are very clear. Oh, it's not a promised for return, but they have a lot of history. And so to say, okay, well, it's a Taiwan-only fund and it's early stage and it's like these sectors that not necessarily, you know, that we need fund. You know, there's plenty of money for semiconductor, for instance. And so what other sectors do we invest in? Consumer, enterprise, et cetera. What else do we do? AI. There's just not a lot of proof, a lot of data points for historical success. And so it's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem. So somebody's got to jump in and take that risk on early stage and see if it can work. I think there's a lot of great accelerators here, AppWorks, Spark Labs, et cetera, some of which give money, some of which don't, but at least they're building that community and that support system and the programming and bringing in mentors and introducing them to their networks all over the world. That's all happening. But I do think a little bit of money would push us a bit. It's worth an experiment anyway. I don't know if it's going to work, but it feels like, just from founder feedback, like, I can't quit my job. That's like most of them say, I can't quit my job. I don't need to raise a lot. Maybe it's $20,000-$30,000 US, like, and I can quit at least for a year, be comfortable, not worry about, you know, life expenses, and do it. But then that pool of money, it's almost invisible. It's not really there.
We all know that you work on like incubator or accelerator to help the Taiwanese startup ecosystem. So how's the project going? Can you share us a bit about that?
So 886 really was helmed by Joe Hay and Kai Huang for the most part. We were sort of tangentially involved. Honestly, I wasn't as involved as I wanted to be. I was not very responsible about it, but I did help here and there. But they did a great job. I mean, they've got five companies now in 886 Studios, which is it's kind of gone through many iterations. It started as more of like a venture studio, and now it's more of an incubator. And they're doing a lot of community work too. It's just a small team, right? These days, it's mostly Kai, Freya, and Yulia, and they've done a great job, I think, just getting something going. So I can't take any credit for that at all. But I do think it's really cool what they've done. The accelerator side of things, so we're starting to work on that. Hasn't really launched yet. Mostly we've just been doing research and then trying to raise some funding for it. And that's been, it's been, you know, it's just, it's tough market out there right now for fundraising. But regardless, I think we're in a good stage now where we can kick it off. And it's somewhat broad, although I think we might try to focus down on a few categories first that we think are that perfect intersection of what are Taiwanese good at, or potentially good at, and what is interesting business for whatever target market you go for. And so we're getting that going now. And I think, yeah, I'm excited about it. And it's cool. There's other programs out there, right? Google ran Project Hatcher recently, which is almost this like Shark Tank thing. It's sort of like Shark Tank, but like a polite Shark Tank. And
why you didn't do harsh for these Taiwanese startups?
Yeah, I mean, I give good direct feedback, I think. I try to be very direct and objective. I think I'm not very, you know, overly dramatic. But like, you know, things I learned from that, very similar to things I've learned talking to founders in general, is, you know, pitching yourself is really a skill. You have to hone and practice and learn and train yourself on, and get feedback from people who have done it before, people who are investors. Like, you need a broad swath of feedback to really get it down. To be honest, I think, you know, of the 24 or so pitches that Steve and I saw, maybe two were like really good, like excellent. Like, I think if they were pitching at any other demo day, would have gotten a lot of interest. But the rest were kind of, they were lacking in many different ways, right? And a lot of it is clarity of the context for a layperson, someone who doesn't understand your industry at all. You have to build that context really fast, right? A minute or two, you know, and then you have to lay out the problem. Like, why is you and your team, you know, specialized, so to speak, to solve this problem? How big is the opportunity? Why, you know, why are you going to be successful? Why do you win? And so there's all these like sort of templated pitches out there that you see. Sequoia's got one that's like been used by almost probably, I would guess, at least 50% of founders out there in Bay Area at this point. YC's got a great application on their site. That's their application process. That is another, you know, 15-year honed list of questions that any investor will want to know. You know, so you could just lean on that. There's all the, you know, you have the benefit of the past, you have the benefit of history and learning, and very smart people who are constantly iterating on what is it that we need to know in order to be successful investors. Translates on the other side to, you know, how do you be a successful founder? And so I think it's just really distilling all of that. It exists, you know, it's all out there. And the people are super willing to help. Like what's the beauty about the Bay Area is a lot of the people that are there and successful are still there because they just want to give back. They like this feeling of progress. They like the feeling of innovation. They like the feeling of, you know, humanity, you know, transcending to something better. And so I think you can get help from all over the place. It's just really getting it structured here, I think, has been, you know, there are lots of pieces out there. There's lots of great efforts, a lot of great people out there. And so I think the momentum is really good. It's just, I don't know. I don't know what the very clear answer, I don't have a very clear answer of like, what's like the final nudge that will get Taiwan's ecosystem going. It's just it's a process.
Yeah. And speaking of pitching and selling, I think many Taiwanese startups are doing great domestically, but they have difficulty in scaling. So what do you think they lack when it comes to going global and like scaling up globally?
Yeah, how do you get scale globally? What's an example actually of like in your mind of a company here that's done well in Taiwan but hasn't scaled outside?
That's a tricky to name the
some e-commerce startups.
Yeah, some e-commerce.
Well, e-commerce, depending on the type, broadly speaking, is very capital intensive. You've got to get your fulfillment centers. You've got to get all that stuff set up, or you find your partners there. And if you find partners, then your costs go up and your margins go down. And so that's tough, right? Because it depends on what type of thing you're selling, I suppose. But I think that could be very market specific, as in Taiwanese just like a certain thing and other people don't. That's probably not the case in most cases. The other possibilities are, the economics of it just don't work somewhere else because Taiwan's, operations system works a little bit differently. Okay, so I'll give you some examples of my experience talking with founders here. This was years ago. This was probably 6 or 7 years ago. My friend here introduced me to a couple of startups. One of them had started with this like tea e-commerce company. They were wanting to promote Taiwanese tea to the world. I'm like, okay, cool. That's a potentially relatively large idea. But they pivoted to salad delivery, local salad delivery, specifically salad. And this was before Uber Eats and Food Panda was a big thing. So I'm like, okay, cool. That actually, a delivery platform, if you can figure out however you do it, whether it's a courier system or staff, however you want to think about it, could be big. That's something you could export to another place. But they were just so fixated on just, local delivery. Another company also flipped from, I don't think it was e-commerce, I don't really remember what they started at, but they flipped to fresh milk delivery. And so I don't know, there was something about this group really wanted to do delivery. And again, delivery can be a big idea. Look at what we use today. Most of it came from America or elsewhere. But they think about it in like this very, it's just thinking about local. And I think the other input that causes this is if you do get investors, a lot of the investors here are a bit more conservative. And so they'll focus a lot on revenue. They focus a lot on revenue and getting to profitability fast. Whereas in San Francisco, generally, of course, it depends on the industry you're in. They push you to just grow. Get audience. The venture funding is there for you to grow as fast as possible and get your wedge in into your customer base. And then you can start to focus on revenue and optimization of revenue and profit. And so these are two. They're not always competing priorities, but oftentimes they are competing priorities. And that's why venture exists, right? And so I think that ends up, you see these folks that find, okay, I found a business model. People want it. But then the growth is relatively slow because of this focus on profit rather than focus on, let's just get a bunch of customers. And so that's one thing. And that's like maybe almost like foreign language to some people, because it's like, why wouldn't you focus on profit if you can get there? Just get there, slow grow your business, build a small business over the years, build it into a larger business. That can work, of course. But a lot of why San Francisco works so well is you take that risk. Right? You take the risk and grow. And sometimes it completely comes crashing down, right? You look at this overinvestment, all this marketing, all this, theoretical user base, and then these companies just one day dissolve, completely disappear. And so it's easy to point to examples where like that methodology is bad too, right? I think Taiwan is a sufficient tester base. When I first got here, everyone's like, oh, you're not going to want to invest in companies here because the potential for the Taiwan market's too small. And I'm like, well, yeah, but most companies that are successful in tech are global companies, right? First of all. Second of all, I bet there are markets here where it's sufficiently big for a testing audience, right? And you think about, so games I'm really excited about here, because not only are there lots of trained gaming professionals in Taiwan through work for hire and previously actually building big games, MMOs, massive multiplayer games, but also Taiwanese play a lot of games. We're one of the top countries in the world by average spend per user per year. And there's, 15 million players or more. So actually you could grow a pretty decent audience just in Taiwan alone. And so we punch above our weight there, both on the development side and also on the customer side. And then that's also true for digital apps. Taiwanese spend a lot of time in digital apps and have a propensity to spend as well. So you can't. I really believe that certain categories you can. B2B enterprise, I don't know. Maybe it's too small, although there's tons of businesses in Taiwan. Taiwan's almost like the land of small businesses. So there's maybe, potential there too. But I think I did hear that all the time. It's too small. We can't grow. It was impossible to grow because we're too small. I just disagree with that.
I've been curious about one question is that, like, we all heard that Taiwanese startups cannot expand to the global market or they don't view the global market. But take Uber as example. I think Uber just solved San Francisco residents' problem. But I don't know why they can become so big. Because for the taxis in Taiwan, you can easily just have taxis. You don't need Uber.
Well, some people don't want to do the work of flagging down a taxi, right? And it's Uber is like McDonald's. It's trusted by foreigners, right? People who visit will use Uber because they know it. It's easy. You don't have to talk to anybody. You don't have to worry about language barriers. The cost is roughly the same, if not actually sometimes cheaper. And so that's why it works, I think. Is it good? I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily good, but it does work in that way. And so that's why I think brands like that globally work really well, because it's like it's a commodity basically almost, you know, where, you know, you want to go somewhere. Why do you ever eat McDonald's in when you travel? Because sometimes you just, it's a little bit of nostalgia, you know, you miss home, but also, you know, it's reliable food.
But like Instacart or lots of service that just, I think just solve San Francisco's problem, but I don't know why they can just easily grow to that global scale. Yeah. So do you think maybe Taiwanese startups should maybe move to San Francisco and think of a product that can solve the question there and expand to the global market?
I think that would help a lot. If we could get more folks to go to Bay Area or even, you know, New York, these other sort of concentrated, already successful ecosystems, I think it would be super helpful, right? And it's not just learning this side of it, you know, learning to find the customers, understand the customer need, but also just the energy of being around other builders and people who have, you know, gone before. That helps a lot. And you build a network, you get to know people, you can recruit people that have, you know, that are awesome, that have built things before, that have the expertise that you need. Yes, for sure. That type of exchange is incredibly valuable. That said, it's, you know, you can't always do that. Not everyone's able to do that. So can you do both? I think you certainly can. There's all these like pockets of startups in America now that are working and sort of specialized, because a founder will go back and bring a bunch of their friends over there and they start to build, you know, their own mini network that starts to grow over time. But they always have the San Francisco connection. So I think that is a very important strategy for Taiwan.
Yeah. So it seems like the infrastructure for this startup ecosystem is Taiwan need more like infrastructure. And I just heard that you're building the accelerators maybe to help these Taiwanese founders. Can you talk more about your accelerator project?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like every startup, it's going to be a lot of experimenting. I think one of our big things is try to get companies into Y Combinator, 500 Startup, other accelerators, and starting super early, like really, really early, and doing a lot of close work with founders and keeping the first couple of batches relatively small as a result, until we can figure out like what it is that's different here. You know, what do Taiwanese founders need in terms of mentorship or programming or access that is unique, if there is anything unique. And so it's really just getting hands-on and figuring that out. But a big part of it is, yeah, getting more companies into YC as one simple example strategy is I think very beneficial. To your point, you get people over there, they start to network, they start to, you know, understand the thinking process, understand the creation, the innovation process, the product design process, all of that stuff that there's not as much experience here. Thinking about go-to-market, thinking about marketing, thinking about building, you know, your first 100 customer base. So I think that is a big part of the strategy. But for those who don't want to do that, not everybody can do that, right? For many reasons, whether it's family or otherwise. And so they want to stay here. Just, you know, we could do our best to transport as much of that knowledge and experience here as possible. And so you got to play in all fields, right? You have to do this if you really want an ecosystem to grow. And so we just figured, yeah, give it a shot and see if that works. But it's going to be, you know, similar to other accelerators in a way. The difference is just going to be us, the mentors. Can we do it better? We don't know. We're going to do our best though, right? And so that's really the primary difference. Now, I think, you know, we've been there, we've seen a lot. You know, I've personally invested in almost 400 companies. I don't recommend doing that personally on an angel basis. And so I have, you know, worked with a ton of founders, have a lot of pattern matching that I can lean on, but most importantly, I have a lot of awesome friends that are like just brilliant in their field, like so good at helping founders that hopefully will help us out, you know, while we do this. And the goal is to go as fast as possible. You know, I don't know, you know, traditional accelerators, 10 to 12 weeks, maybe we could get things out a little bit more quickly. You know, how do we really train people as fast as possible? Because I think, yeah, Taiwan's like, I think the faster we go, the better. You know, we don't, there's so much talent here. I think that's the thing that really striking to me is people are really experienced, again, sometimes through work for hire. And so they're not necessarily used to building a product from scratch, but that's pretty easy to teach. And then, you know, learning to be comfortable asking for help, asking questions, relatively easy to teach as well. And so it's just, yeah, just a hypothesis of ours that, okay, if we get more involved in a structured way, we're deploying capital, which means we feel very responsible for the capital because it's not just ours anymore. It's friends and other people's capital. We'll be much more, you know, rigorous and diligent about it. But then we can really build structure, I think. And that's what I think is the thing that's been missing for me personally. I help random founders I meet every now and then, but I'm not structured and I don't feel necessarily responsible and I feel bad about it, but like I don't necessarily feel the drive. And so that structure will certainly help me just focus down on it.
Do you think it's hard to for the founders that target global market to move to the San Francisco, like experience the culture and startup ecosystem there for like 1 year, 2 years?
Do they have to do it? You know, I don't think you have to. I think going and visiting and doing a, you know, a YC or some other startup school bootcamp style thing is probably beneficial because it's just good to immerse yourself in it and good to meet people and understand how that community works. Because when you go to San Francisco, like you go to an event, everyone's talking about crazy stuff, you know, just wild ideas. Some of them end up sticking, but it gives you this energy, you know, it gives you this sense of like hope and almost also responsibility for like, I got to do something. You know, all these people around me are doing lots of amazing stuff. And so you do get that sense being there. But for other sort of more mechanical reasons, like going there to meet investors, going there to meet potential recruits, like that's all really valuable too. And so do you need to go for a year or two? Needs a strong word. I'd say if you can do it, it would be very worthwhile to do so.
One last question could be, where can people find you if they need help?
I got locked out of my Line account. If you know anybody at Line, please tell me I need help. I will be announcing some stuff soon. So we'll have an office soon. We'll have things like that. But yeah, you can reach me. Yeah, you can email me, kevin@metatheory.gg. Find me on Instagram. Twitter, I'm all Kevin Lin. But I don't check Twitter that much, or X now. So yeah, I think that's probably the easiest way.
You do a lot of projects for Taiwan startup founders. So I also curious about one question is that, I need to confess first, sometimes because we need to bring startup delegation to San Francisco to visit founders or other investors, corporates, sometimes just feel really tired. Do you ever feel tired to help these founders to do these volunteering things?
No, it's generally, I think I get tired for other reasons. I think talking to founders is generally pretty fun. I mean, every now and then you meet someone who's just like, you know, they're not there for the right reason and you can tell. And so that's a little tiresome, but no, I get energy from that. You know, I really get excited just talking to people who are excited about, you know, building something, solving an interesting problem. So that gives me a lot of energy, actually. Yeah, when you meet enough people, you find a lot of people who are just there, like they're just kind of fake, right? They're just there because they just think it's cool or something, and care more about like the presence versus the work itself. So that's a little annoying, but here I haven't felt that at all since most people, it's hard, you know, there's not a lot of support structure here yet. So the people who are doing it are there because they really want to.
I guess your like LinkedIn files or emails are flooded with different founders that want to seek help.
I get a lot of email.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot.
Tons of emails.
Oh my God. It's almost like, yeah, it's a lot, but it's cool. You know, it's cool to see it. But referral is always best, right? Because then at least I know a friend's, it's either a friend of a friend or they met them and, you know, talk to them and think they're like, you know, they're in it, you know, and I think that helps. But I don't mind it. I think it's cool. It's cool to see people trying to make stuff.
My last question is, I just wonder, what's your favorite food in Taiwan?
Oh, man.
Because we knew that you went to the AIT podcast to talk about your food from Louisiana, right?
Yeah, so, that's right. Yeah. I did. You know, what is my favorite food here? I actually really like stinky tofu.
Stinky tofu? Okay.
Yeah. I went to this very extreme place called Dai's House of Unique Stink. They have 15 levels of stinkiness. The 15th level is pretty extreme. What else do I like? I mean, I like simple. Like I like fanton.
But okay, yeah,
there's this one place that has a cheesy fanton that's really good. And then I went to this restaurant recently. My friend was nice enough to get us a reservation at Fujin Tree.
It's like a modern Taiwanese place.
That place is awesome.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah, they have this like oyster and youtiao dish that's really good. And this, what's this vegetable called? Fly's head? It's like a like crispy green vegetable. That's also really, that place is awesome. But I end up, I go to Taihu Burger a lot. I go there probably at least once a week. Yeah, I eat pretty simple.
So founders can meet you at Taihu.
I love that. I like hanging out there. So yeah, if you want to convince me to go somewhere, we can meet at Taihu.
Okay, we're so glad to have Kevin live in Taiwan and help these founders. Thank you, Kevin, for coming to our show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.